Hello, this is Janice Alpert. Welcome to On Purpose, where we talk to interesting people about who they are and what their purpose is. And today, of course, is no exception. We have Lisa McCord. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Janice. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it so much. So as most of my listeners know, I don't really know too much about the people I interview. I try to make it, as I shared with you, a little bit organic. So why don't you tell me a little bit, like just even from the beginning, where'd you grow up and a little bit about your family and...
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Let's hear your story. Yeah.
I feel like already that's not a very little question, but...
Well, it's a beginning because we don't get to where we are now. Part of why I always like to ask a little bit about the background is because I feel like if we don't know where we came, how are we going to know where we, you know, especially for people who are listening, if they are struggling, kind of have to, and I am a therapist, which everybody knows. So I always have to ask a little bit about the background. So let's hear a little bit about yours, if you're okay with that.
Unpacking background is what we do all the time at my joy school. Unpacking background is where all of the gems are mined. So I totally understand that. Yes. So I grew up in the Northeast to a Southern family. My family was all Southerners who, by the time I came around, were pretty much up in the New Jersey, New York area.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. How much you want? You want the whole caboodle?
The whole caboodle. How many do you have, brothers and sisters? What was your family like? Yeah.
Yeah. I have one of each on the brother and sister front. I was the eldest. I was the child of an unwed teen mom, created a huge, horribleness in the family and in her family. My grandmother, her parents were very, very, very much involved in their Southern Baptist church. She was the...
very bad sin. Oh my God. Yes.
Yes. Lots and lots of shame came in with my human existence entrance onto the planet. So
sorry.
Lots and lots of shame. There was a father that had been enlisted and pulled in who was not my biological father, who only lasted a couple of years. Then there was another father that they told me was my biological father. This is what I'm saying. Like, you're starting out with like not a small question.
No, I see that. You had a complicated background, but go ahead.
Background. Yeah.
So number two man came in and they told you he was your biological father, but was he?
No, this is the second one that I grew up thinking was my father. I found out at 36 that he was not my biological father.
Wow. Oh my God. It would
have been great having known earlier because he never, you know, really had that father thing potential for me.
Crazy. Yes. So did you ever meet your biological father?
No, never.
Yeah. No. So with the second male who you thought was your biological father, is that where the other two siblings came from? Or
yes.
So but he and your mom, are they still together? Or okay.
No, that ended when I was 12.
Oh, okay. So you still ended up with kind of being mostly raised from a single parent home. Is that kind of...
I became a parentified child when that dad left. And my brother and sister would go see him on the weekends, but I wasn't supposed to, which I never understood. And my mom would say, he doesn't even pay child support for you. Why would you want to go?
Oh,
he didn't pay child support for me. So you pretty much have unpacked the source of most of my trauma.
That's very traumatic. How did you do any acting out? Like, how'd you cope with it as you moved into high school? And
I actually did not ever act out. I went the other way. I was this super, super, super pleaser, good girl. Basically, my childhood trying to be as invisible and helpful as possible.
I bet, because you didn't want to start any more commotion. Yeah.
So kind of like breaking out of the really tight shell of that, I have to be all things to all people, just pleasing to everyone all the time. It's been my journey.
Yeah. Well, that must not have always been easy. Yeah. So so at this point you're in high school in New Jersey or New York area, whatever.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so during high school, did you like, were you in any other outside activities or how did you like, that's a lot to manage.
Yeah. I was always a pretty, kind of ostracized weirdo sort of child.
Kid.
In elementary school, they thought I was mute. I couldn't talk. I wouldn't express myself. When I would try to write
on tests or anything. The teacher had to hold it up to the light to see that I had even made any marks. It looked like,
wow. Okay.
So fearful of self-expression. And now I write.
Well, I'm sure you were also fearful of being criticized and ostracized, or like you said, or whatever. So silence is safety, if I'm you. Yeah.
Yeah. No, silence is safety was very much a motto for me in my more, you know, earlier periods of my life. Somehow at age 14, and I would love to know how the universe got this book in my hands, because it's not something that I can imagine how it ever would have happened. But somehow at 14, I held my first book that actually made me feel seen and like validated as a human on this planet. And it was Wayne Dyer's Your Erroneous Zones.
Oh, I am that book. Are you kidding me? That was one of my first.
It was completely lost on me.
I remember that book. That was one of my first spiritual books too. Yes. I know that book. Yep.
So in my 14-year-old diaries and my little shy handwriting, I was copying passages and passages of Wayne Dyer. And I thought Wayne Dyer was like the only human on the planet who like understood
yes.
the way that I think and the way that I am. And gradually it became clear to me that this was a genre of reading material that I could
exactly.
get my hands on. And it started opening up that world. So then in college, I was blessed. I thought I wanted to be a psych major.
That's what I was going to say. What did you do? Did you go into psychology in college? Yeah.
I thought that was what I was after. And then after the first year, it just, none of it was what I really wanted to learn. But I was blessed with a wonderful mentor. It was the advisor, head of our psych department at Drew University, Barbara Stone. And she understood what I was curious about to know. And she allowed me to devise a independent study program where I got to study Buddhism and comparative religion.
Wow.
Spiritual practices.
That was a while ago. So that was very, not only besides the whole New Age thing, was very innovative at that time. I mean, you're not old, but I'm just saying that's still not like nowadays. I could see that would be like a no big deal. But 20, 30 years ago, it's a big deal.
It really was. And it changed my life. It was like once I started dipping my toes in those waters and I just saw the value of these ancient principles and what they were able to do for me, then mm-hmm. it just comes like there's no other thing I could possibly do with my life that could compare it to.
So you started feeling that in terms of, up until that time, you were kind of just trying to be a good girl, be a pleaser, not get in trouble. But there wasn't any, until you met Wayne Dyer, whatever his name is, I can never remember. There wasn't any feeling inside like, this is my path and this is what I'm going to do in my life. You were just kind of trying to get through life as unharmed as possible, so to speak.
When you put it that way, I will say, I didn't know that there was terminology for it. I didn't know what it was, but I think from a pretty early age, I was doing what I now call accessing my soul. I knew that there were times when I would have what I now recognize to be spiritual experiences where I would just felt held and loved and like just nourished by something. And I have other spiritual friends who say that they had a similar experience and they considered it like a guardian angel or a spirit guide.
Right.
I had the experience that it was a part of me, but
wow,
access it all the time. It was like a, sort of a fleeting thing that I
remember thinking like what it, for anyone, because I had some of those feelings when I was also a young child and thinking, well, what's wrong with me? Well, why am I thinking this? Why am I feeling this? And just kind of pushing it aside. And it really didn't come back until I was in my 20s. So I just went, I don't know what's happening here. Because I remember thinking, why am I in this body? I feel like there's something like at a very young age and going, that is a weird thing to be thinking. And so I'm not going to think about it anymore. So you had some of those experiences yourself as a young child.
Yeah.
In the midst of all this.
Very young child.
Chaos.
It didn't occur to me to think it was weird. I just thought everybody was having that.
Oh.
Yes. As we get older and we start realizing like, oh, wait, everybody's not having this. This is weird. I'm going to shut this down. I'm not going to talk about this with anybody.
Exactly. Well, that's how I felt. I don't know about others, but that's how I felt. Yes.
Yeah. I think we come to that point. I think at first I just thought that's life. Everybody has this. But mm-hmm. then like you're saying, yeah, then it becomes, I don't want to be such a weirdo. I don't want to, you know, nobody else on the planet is talking about this.
It's until you find your whatever, your own voice and your own calling. And then it's again kind of a miracle. Then all of a sudden you find other people who are like, oh, yeah, well, I'm on that page with you. I get what you're saying. And still other people may not, but that's okay. I mean, we all have our own, I feel we all have our own journey. It's not a right or wrong. It's just it is. But you have this wonderful mentor, besides getting the Wayne Dyer book, which was probably not an accident. You know, those things happen that somebody's watching out to help us out when we need it. Then you got to college, thought about psychology, and then really thought, you know what? I'm really into the spiritual part. And you had this wonderful mentor. So did you make up the whole program yourself? Or like, what did your degree end up being? How did all that work?
Well, I had to be an English major because it had to be one of the majors that was, you know.
Oh, the kosher, major. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was able to be an English major by just writing papers for my whole college experience. And,
okay.
And Barbara had recommended a lot of books for me reading. So I got to write papers and do studies into the things that interested me.
And you were in college. Were you away from home when you went to school or did you? So where'd you, I think you said, where'd you go to college?
Brew University. It's a small liberal arts school in New Jersey.
Oh, okay. But you got to live away.
Yes.
Yeah. And so did you make, how was it as far as socially for you? Like,
I had a handful of friends.
Okay.
Really close-knit little group that you know, we're still in contact.
Okay. So now you get your major and you graduate college and you think to yourself, now how do I don't know if you think to yourself, but this is what I was thinking when I graduated college. Okay, how am I going to get a job? Well, not for me because I was a teacher, so it wasn't like that. I mean, it was hard to get a job, but it wasn't like, what am I going to do? I'm going to go teach. So what does one do with your degree? Or what did you do?
I went into publishing because I felt that the one thing that kind of had been a thread throughout my school life was that I was really good at writing. I think it's one of those Malcolm Gladwell 1,000-hour things that if you put enough time, or 10,000 hours, whatever he said,
right,
put enough time into anything, you're going to build that skill set. And I was such a journaler my entire life. I feel like journaling was my sanity. It was my way that
I'm with you. I'm a journaler. Yep.
Ah. So writing always came really easy for me. The English degree with the writing major, English major with the writing minor, I just went into publishing and kept my spiritual side sort of secret and closeted for a long time. Went into the trainings. I was a big TM. I did TM at a very, very young age.
That's transcendental meditation for those who may not know what that is. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
So when you say you did publishing, did you work for like a firm, like a publishing company? And
yes, I went into children's publishing. Yeah. It was it's Scholastic Books is.
Oh, sure. I know Scholastic Books.
Yeah, it's a parent company of the offshoot that I originally worked for, which was Troll Associates. And they did the school book clubs. And yeah,
that's unbelievable. And did you like doing that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, very much.
Mm-hmm.
So my earlier writing was for children because I had that background in that industry.
Mm-hmm. So while you were doing the, you know, edit or whatever you were doing, was it editing or were you actually doing some writing or what was?
Both. I was doing editing and copywriting.
Okay. And do you remember while you were doing that thinking, oh, this is really part of my mission in life here, or like kind of my soul's purpose, or what was kind of.
I didn't really think of it that way so much yet, but I think that simultaneous to it, I was doing so much personal growth work, and what became really, really apparent to me because it applied to me, but I also realized it applied to so many others, was this concept of core unworthiness that we just, it's very rare to get through early developmental stage without developing some unlovability, core unworthiness issues, these beliefs that you know, can.
That we're not worthy. Most of us have some feeling. I can say that is a fact that very few of us have, you know, don't have some feelings of either insecurity or unworthiness, you know, because not that I always say our parents didn't mean it, but they just usually said stuff that really. And, you know, then we have to work it out, hopefully, as adults to say, wait a second here. Do I want to put my whole self-esteem in my parents that probably had their own issues? And again, they did the best they can. Doesn't mean we don't love our parents, because we do and we can and whatever. I hope my kids still love me. No, I know they do. I hope they do. but we're going to all make mistakes. So you said to yourself, while you're doing your publishing and you're editing and whatever, and that's fine. And you love doing that, but you still felt like I need to do some more work on myself. in terms of my own spiritual growth.
Oh, for sure. That's been forever to this day. I do work on myself for my spiritual growth. That's like an onion with endless layers.
Agreed. Agreed.
But you were asking about, like, did I feel it was my purpose doing this publishing for kids? Not fully in alignment there, but yet I could see that I was in a position to influence reading of young children. So I did try to skew it in that direction of how can we counter this, like, really ubiquitous, like, prevalent case of kids. And it can go either way. I think you're right. I always say parents do the best they can with what they've been taught and what they write at. But it can be from sort of like emotional neglect, which is just lack of attunement, which unless you have highly evolved parents, you're going to have lack of attunement. To
yes, you are.
Being. Or even the other way, the hyper-vigilant parent who's trying to give your child every energy and every, that can do just as much for.
I was just away with a friend and she has a daughter who has young children. And she went to visit and she literally was going, if she said one more time to the 3-year-old or 4-year-old, whatever, so tell me, how are you feeling about putting your shoes on? That it's so the other way where she said, you're putting your shoes on. And that's, you know, like I feel that this younger generation now has maybe gone a little, and here I am a therapist. So I'm all about being sensitive to everybody's feelings. But sometimes I think there could be a 25-minute conversation about putting your shoes on when I'm thinking you're the boss. Tell the kid to put the shoes on or don't put the shoes on. But let's not have a 3-hour negotiation about it. So. Yeah. So it can go the other way where they're so hypervigilant of every feeling, which is not healthy for the child either, because sometimes the kid has to learn how to manage that the answer is no, and it's not going to be your way. And that's okay, too. It builds emotional strength. So go ahead. So you felt you could try to do something in the middle. Yeah.
Parents who are listening, we love you. We're sorry, parents who are listening. Parenting is
really, we love you. Hard. We're just trying to point out that, you know, you might want to just try to do something a little more in the middle and that would be good. I don't want you to be like my parents who could, may they rest in peace, could care less how I feel. But then and I listen, as a parent, I'm sure I too was like a little too touchy, like, how are you? Are you okay? Because my parents were, but then now this generation that I think is coming up in their 30s have now gone like a little bonkers the other way. So maybe they can bring it back in the middle, but go ahead. So you decided, though, I want to try to help and bring more joy and have the kids have better self-esteem. So what, how did that, did you decide to write a book yourself or did you, what, how did that?
I did. I just sort of got it download and it was funny and light, but to me, it had the messaging that would reach kids. It's called I Love You Stinky Face. And it's just a very like parental, unconditional love.
It's so cute. I Love You Stinky Face. I love that. I'm going to look that up. Yeah, go ahead.
And it was super, super successful. It was at the time just like a really fast, widely selling, very popular book.
Right. Congratulations. That's wonderful. And did Scholastic publish it or did you have to? Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Scholastic. It's got 10 sequels to this day. It's still in circulation. And that was maybe 6 years ago.
Lisa, that's amazing. That's wonderful. Speaking, I mean, I'm an author and mine are not having 25 different published. Yeah, I mean, it's whatever. It's, they're doing okay, I guess. I don't even know. I don't keep track. But that's, I know how hard and how much time it takes to write a book and get it out there. And so good for you.
Thank you.
Did that. And that felt, and did that feel like, okay, now I'm on track here. I'm more on what I should be doing in the world.
I feel like it started unlocking the magic. And I think anybody who's been on a spiritual journey, you know, knows what I mean about like that turning point where you realize the energetic truth of the world and that you realize when you're doing something from that soul level of pure purpose, how easy and effortless it is and how, you know, so I think that once I started seeing the external results of working the magic that I had been learning.
First of all, I love that terminology about working the magic. I think that's like a great description of what happens. Yeah, go ahead. So
I was invited to speak at lots of conferences and schools and for adults and for kids. So I started developing these programs around creativity. That was the first buzzword I was using because like for the public school system, you don't go in with like, I have this spiritual program for kids.
Oh, please. Even creativity is not always well received, but go ahead.
And so I would gloss over what they were expecting in terms of creating your poetry and your music and your artwork. And then we would get into creating your life, creating your relationships, creating the next version of you, and all of the really the Buddhism and the, you know, their thoughts are being our reality.
And you would do this in schools and mm-hmm. like companies too, or just
mostly conferences and schools or libraries. If I would travel to a city, there would be, you know, something for grown-ups and something for kids, typically both.
Okay.
And gradually that's what got me out of the closet, because here I'm talking about the things that matter to me that I know are so real and important that I want, with this like burning desire to like share with people. So that's when I wrote my first adult book about spirituality, which was a Hay House book in 2012.
Okay. What's the name of that book?
Juicy Joy.
Juicy Joy. I love your titles. Juicy Joy. Okay.
And that's when I started using joy, because I felt like that was a better buzzword than creativity. And I've always sort of just found myself in this middle position of being kind of a bridge brand. So I feel like joy is something everybody can recognize that they want more of in their life. Possibly, you know, alignment with your soul is not something that everybody's going to jump on board for, but that is the result of alignment with your soul. So
I would agree. I think that's so true. If you ask anybody, do you want more joy in your life? Everyone's going to say yes. If you say, do you want to align with your soul? They might say yes, but they also might say, I don't even know what you're talking about. I mean, how do I even do that? I don't know. But if you say, well, if you find yourself in a place of joy, personally and professionally, you will notice, as you just used that great word, the magic, and it's not work, and you yourself feel more fulfilled, and whoever you're around, you're also giving to them. So it's a win-win.
Yeah.
And so you ended up creating like a whole business, it sounds like. I mean, because that's, you know, people often have said to me many times, well, that's great if you find your purpose, but what if you're not making any money? And I always say, if you're really doing what you're supposed to be doing, abundance is going to come your way. So you can charge. It's okay. Money is okay. So I assume you've made money doing your joy.
I've made money doing the joy. Yeah. And it's funny. It's like when you have a business, when you're self-employed, there are 1,000 people wanting to help you grow your business and build your business in this way and this way. And it's been such a delicate balance, because there's a part of me that just really resists that. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm sure that I could be more abundant. I'm sure that I could be like a bigger whatever if I did all these things I'm supposed to be doing. But I'm really comfortable with just, this is what I do. I'm on a team. I've always seen myself as just wanting to join this team of people who are out there up-leveling these principles in the world. My whole understanding and turnaround came from authors and teachers. So if I can be an author and teacher who's out there spreading these principles, I'm happy with whatever that position on the team looks like. You know,
I love that. No, it's funny, because I was just talking to Noah, and I've mentioned a little bit about this. You know, I've said I have a book myself that I wrote about 20 years ago, and it's a kind of about my life story, and it needs a lot of editing and whatever. And I got this message. I'm not even going to get into it, but I've gotten several messages from just crazy sources. I haven't even looked at the book in 20 years. Like, maybe I should get this story out in a different way, in a new version, whatever. But the truth of the matter is, and I've been working on it for the last few months, it's a lot of work. I'm not 45 anymore. I may not want to do this. I'm really feeling good about, I love doing the podcast. I'm still seeing clients. I'm a mom and a grandma. And I'm thinking, is this something that I really need to do at this stage of my life? So I don't know yet, by the way, don't know. But I'm just saying that I think we get messages like, my ego says, yes, do this, because this will be great and, you know, whatever. And then my inside self kind of is going, well, I don't know. I'm kind of tired. You know, I'm in my 70s now and I don't know. Do I really want to do this? I'm not exactly sure that I do. And so again, I'm just sharing with the listeners that I'm in process, but very much what you're saying, it's even if you get messages like, oh, you can expand, you can do more, you still have to, at least I feel, like today I literally did a meditation, I love how the universe did, that I didn't really realize you were in the writing. I knew you did something with joy, but I think this is hysterical that, you know, today I'm talking to you, and that you just said what you said, because I literally was doing a meditation. I have several that I listen to, and today's was about being connected to my spiritual guide, which I think we all have them, and literally asking, now should I go forward with this book? And then just sort of wait. I always wait to see if there's an answer. And so I'm not saying you're giving me an answer, not giving me an answer, but I feel this is interesting that this is what you're sharing at this particular time. And so I find it very helpful. So thank you. I love that you know that though about yourself, because often I think when people do find their purpose and they think, well, I'm doing this, so now I have to do more. And maybe you don't. And that's okay too. So you have to listen to, you know, I feel we're all given talents and creativity and whatever we're given. And do I feel we should use those? Yes. Do I feel they can be monetized? Yes. Do I also feel that we should also have balance? And so if we need a nap or whatever, we should have that too? Or yes. And it's always navigating that. But first step is that you kind of have to figure out, am I on my path? Do I feel that joy? Do I feel that magic? So you're saying where you are right now. So right now, I didn't mean to digress into the Janice Alpert story here. But anyways, you're right now still teaching or doing conferences and helping authors. And that's kind of what you're doing right now? Or what do you?
No, I
still. Now, what are you doing right now?
I used to help authors a while ago, but I put all that to rest. All I do, I have a joy school, an online joy school that we have online groups that meet 4 times a month, and we support one another in applying spiritual principles to our lives and coming back and talking about it and holding that group energy together. It's really, really beautiful. That's been ongoing for a while. I also do 3-month intensives with private clients where I meet with them privately and they're in the groups.
Okay.
And I had a book released this past August. So,
another book. And what's this book?
It's called Free Your Joy.
Oh, Free Your Joy. Okay. But it sounds like it's all centered around your terminology is joy, but it's really about how you get in touch with your soul and be aligned with your inner deepest self.
It really is. I mean, to me, it's just it. And I know you probably feel the same way. Everybody who has sort of peeked behind the veil, it's heartbreaking to see the suffering that is,
I know,
necessary. The people just walking around in such misery, and every single one of us has a soul. There's nobody walking around out there without one, and learning how to relax into it, fall back into it, make that connection, just building that practice. Everybody could have it.
Exactly. There's so much suffering, not just in day-to-day life with, you know, whatever, career or family or children. There's suffering in our world on all kinds of different levels. And I still, not to be so simplistic, but it's part of why I think there's all this war and all this, you know, unbelievable divisiveness, not just in our country, which of course there's that, but in the world, is because we're not in touch. And I feel like we're trying to be shaken up. That's why I always felt that the pandemic was supposed to be a timeout for us to reflect on who we are. I'm not sure we did that great of a job, because it doesn't seem like things are improving that much. But I am the eternal optimist. And I just feel that if we each individual can do our part to be in the joy, which to me is soul alignment, then we're helping the world. And so that's kind of where you're at. And so right now at this very moment, you feel like you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're on your path. You're on your purpose.
I do.
And I can see in your face, you feel good and you feel happy about it.
I do.
Wonderful. No, that's great. So just before we kind of close up here a little bit, was there any part of your journey you feel once you got to college to now where you felt like a bump, like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And if so, how did you get, because I feel like that happens a lot. Like people might say, oh, now I understand what I'm supposed to do. And then there's some kind of roadblock and then they sometimes give up. So did anything like that happen for you where you thought, I don't know? And if so, how did you move forward?
So many. But I don't, nothing is jumping out as like, that was the big one. But I do feel like this is how we grow spiritually for a lot of us. It's ouch, ouch, ouch. And it's sort of like just steering away from those triggers, which are just showing us where we have healing to do. Every roadblock is a beautiful gift, just showing us, oh, that's where I have my next level of healing to do. And we just keep healing.
Exactly. Okay. So that's the main thing that, you know, I always want to make sure listeners understand is that no matter who, if someone wants to come on this podcast, they've already probably done a lot of work and they found their purpose. Otherwise, why are they coming? Why are they here to talk? But I always want to make sure everyone understands who's listening that you, Lisa, did not get here without a few scars along the way, because we all do. Me too. Nobody doesn't. We just all do. And that doesn't mean we don't stop doing what we're doing. You know, that if there's a calling inside, a joy calling, I'm going to use it now for today, then we have to, we don't have to, but if we want to feel the joy, then even if there's like a naysayer, and believe me, I've had many, we don't listen. I mean, we listen, but we just say, okay, like you just said, opportunity to grow. Do I want to be in the muck, or do I want to say, okay, what is that teaching me right now? So, and there's always opportunities, always. We all have them every day of our life to either be icky or to say, okay, what am I supposed to be learning? I always say, what am I supposed to be learning for things that aren't going my way, which sometimes things don't go my way. And I'm not ever happy about that. But like, just a typical example, I was just away for 2 weeks. And the first week I went to California to visit my son and his new fiance and my, you know, granddaughter and the new, she has a daughter, whatever. And I ended up with 102 fever and I was in my bed. It was, but here's the thing. I was in California looking at the ocean. I thought, well, if I have to be sick, so, okay, maybe I needed this week to just relax. Maybe I didn't know how tired I was, and it's too bad that it, but if it had to happen and I got to look at the ocean, well, that's so terrible, but it was not, I don't mean to minimize it. It was kind of terrible, but anyways, it was, but I'm fine now and everything is okay. And I did get to see everybody and it was fine, but I just think, what was the point of that? And I thought, you know what? I probably been working too hard and maybe I just needed a week to do nothing, which is what I did, looking at the gorgeous California beach and coastal line, which was quite lovely, I have to say. So, and again,
that perspective allowed you to heal, I believe. If you had railed against it and been just pissed off the whole time and
I agree. What's her name that wrote the book Lean In, the one that was in Sheryl Sandberg. I mean, she was the head of a movie studio and she wrote the book Lean In. I think I don't know if it was before her husband tragically died, whatever it was, but she leaned in. And that's what I think sometimes we have to do when something feels like, how can this be happening? Whatever it is, that if we lean in a little bit and think, well, what can I do to make this be at least tolerable? Because no one is saying suffering is fun or pain is fun or being sick is fun. No. But it does happen. And so when it does, how can we look at that experience and do our best to, like you said, not fight it, but be gentle, compassionate to ourselves. And from that, I think that helps the healing of whatever it is that we have to heal from. So I love that. All right. So Lisa, you're amazing. Any closing? So to any listener who's like thinking, I really do have that inner feeling, I've had the joy, but I haven't really acted on it because I'm afraid, or I might not make money, or I'll lose my job. Any thoughts on, you might want to give them some advice on, and then before I do my quote here, anything you'd like to share with them?
I mean, those fears, that's just your human-y self. You're here with we use the Eckhart Tolle terminology, a vertical self and a horizontal self. And your horizontal self has been programmed with all kinds of fearful thoughts and ideas. And it's a practiced skill. But the more you can get used to falling back into identification with your vertical self, when those fears are coming up, when those frustrations, when those resistances, and just when you're there, you can observe, witness your human-y self going through all of that. And when you can just hold yourself with compassion and love and spaciousness and just watch all this play out, it'll pass. It'll pass. The fears will pass. You'll be guided. You'll be guided on.
If you can trust that, you know, it goes back so much. People say, well, I've had clients ask me that. Well, how do you know that there's something bigger? There's a guide. I go, well, if you do your work, I cannot tell you how many times, even just today, how many times it happens that an answer comes, and you just have to ask. And if you wait, you'll be surprised. It might come from a podcast's guest. It might come from my husband. It might come from my sister. I don't know where it's going to come from, but I know it's going to come. And so if you just kind of trust that and wait, sometimes we have to wait, and waiting is hard. You know, patience is not one of my best qualities. So though many of my clients think I'm the most patient thing on earth, and in some ways in that arena, I guess I am. But I think it's hard sometimes to just wait. So, but if you do and you trust, so you verbalize it as your horizontal and your vertical self. Often in lots of spiritual writings, it's our ego, chat, and or our soul. I interviewed someone a few podcasts ago, and he's a neurologist or something, and he talked about left brain, right brain. So, you know, our right brain is more the creative.
Chris.
Huh? You know, Chris?
Chris, yeah.
And Pat loved it.
We teach together. He teaches at my high school.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's so funny. Okay. Well, that's what how he verbalizes. So it does, to me, it doesn't matter what the terminology is. It's just really understanding that we have a human side and we have a soul side. And it's our soul side that really is what we're here to develop. And the human side is we're here in this human form, I believe, because this is our teaching vessel. So just know that, but that's not really the true, that's one part of who we are. Obviously, it's how we navigate this world, but the real essence is the unseen that's in there. So great. I love what you're saying. Listen to the vertical, not the horizontal. Love it. Okay. So thank you so much, Lisa. If anybody wants to reach you, do you have a website?
It's my name, lisamccourt.com.
Okay. lisamccourt.com. But I bet you if you pressed joyful work, you would come across her as well. Because she's a joyful person. Oh no, you're a joyful person. Oh no. Okay. So this is what I came up with, what I looked at today, or I picked out yesterday. Perhaps the single most important ingredient in all of life for achieving true happiness, joy, and fulfillment is listening to your soul to find purpose, by Harvey. Well, I can't even say his last name. This is sort of funny. His first name is Harvey, and that's my husband's name. And I never heard of this guy, Volson or Vol. Yeah, I'm going to look that guy up. But anyways, his name was Harvey, just like my husband. I think that's meaningful. I don't know. All right, Lisa, thank you so much. Listeners, this is Janice Alpert. Thanks for listening to On Purpose. Hoping you're doing your life with purpose and on purpose. Till next time. Bye-bye.